I really like the way that Rebecca talked about the weirdos and the, you know, some kids are weirdos and some kids aren't. And I was looking around at the congregation, at those of you I know pretty well, Mary Holsapple, and thinking that, isn't it interesting that the weirdos come to this church? The troublemakers, the Bob Holsapple, my mother, Kelsey, Joe Turner. Me. So Joe was right. I do want to sort of fill in for you with Matthew, but I actually want to fill in kind of the whole story. The story does kind of come at us out of context. It took up a little bit from last week, but I'm going to leave that part of it alone. What we sort of missed from last, it takes a jump from last week, and what we missed is that Jesus had been out on his... What we heard last week was he sent the disciples out to do their own ministries and said, you know, don't take anything with you. The people who want to hear you are going to provide you with what you need. And so they went off. But he went off too and did his own ministries of healing and preaching. And to his great disappointment, nobody was listening to him. And so that's the preface for what we heard this morning, his kind of angry and frustrated words about, you know, okay, first you got John the Baptist, and you got mad at him and thought he was a weirdo because he didn't eat, he didn't eat stuff that people approved of. He ate wild locusts. He ate bugs. And he dipped them in honey, and you thought that was strange, and so you wouldn't listen to him. Then I came along, and I ate just great, but you didn't like who I ate with, and so now you're dismissing me. Here you've been given these two great opportunities to have the realm of God revealed to you, and you didn't like one guy because he didn't eat enough, and now you don't like me because you think I eat too much, and you don't like the company either of us keep. So, you know, fill in the bad word. Wesley's friend, I'm sure, would have the appropriate word. And the disciples, I am sure, were taken a little aback by this, because he had, after all, just sent them out to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news of God's realm, and here he is being cranky again. And they, I think, probably came back to him with their own good news, expecting, you know, a sort of joyous reunion. And instead, what we missed in those verses in the middle, I don't know how it's, I've forgotten how it's printed in the bulletin, but it's, you know, this verse through this verse, comma, and then it takes up again. What we missed, because apparently the people who figure out which verses we're going to read each week thought we just weren't up to it, was a section called the woes. And that's where Jesus listed exactly what bad thing is going to happen to those who ignored him in each way. So we missed the specific words of condemnation for each group of naughty people. And frankly, I read it and we're not really missing anything. Unless you want to get depressed this morning. And if you do, I can read them. Yeah, okay. But then he changes tack. And that's really the part of this all that caught me. Some of you know that I'm on the search committee for the new pastor, the new settled pastor. And Pastor Phil's last Sunday, I was the one who put my hand up and said during the prayer time, and said that the search committee really needs prayers, because as we were saying goodbye to Pastor Phil and realizing all of his wonderful gifts to us and how much we loved him and that he'd been here for 10 years, all of a sudden it was borne in upon the members of the search committee, not like we hadn't seen this before, but in a new way, we realized the heaviness of the burden we were carrying. Because it's up to us to find the person who follows him. And after having it sort of laid out in front of us, exactly what it was that we were doing, who this person, magnificent person was that we were saying goodbye to, suddenly the burden got way heavier. I don't want to suggest for a second that the work we're doing has daunted us at all. It's been very joyful work, and every candidate, I think, that we have considered, even for 5 minutes, has been a person of great integrity, people who are overwhelmingly, positively, wonderfully prepared for the ministry, have served wonderful ministries, and the hard thing has been figuring out how to say no to people. So we haven't had any shortage of possibilities. But at the same time, I kind of identify with those people who had John, and they said no, and then they had Jesus, and they said no. Now that's crazy. I think if the search committee got Jesus, I think we would have figured it out and said yes, but you know, there are these moments when we feel like we just said goodbye to Jesus, and what do we do now? Maybe we said goodbye to John the Baptist. And we are not promising Jesus. Let's just be clear on that. Sometimes the burdens are pretty heavy. And it's not just the search committee. Everybody gets their share of burdens. And I'm not going to tell you what your burden is. I'm sure you all know what your burdens are. Burdens, by the way, everybody know that passage about you have to pick up your cross if you want to follow Jesus. Does that sound familiar to people? I mean, it's become an idiom in modern life. People who have nothing to do with Christianity will say, well, you got to pick up your cross, you know. If you want to do what's right, you got to pick up your cross. And in the minds of a lot of people, your cross is, you know, you just found out that you have cancer, or you just found out your brother has cancer, or your business isn't doing very well, or your kids are driving you nuts. None of those things are burdens, by the way. Your burden is the thing you choose to pick up. So your burden might be the Lugari family. They're members of our church, and they just chose to go home to the Philippines on a medical mission and discovered that they were going to an area, the area they were from, which was under, the word just went right out of my head, martial law. That's picking up a burden. Okay? So, you know, picking up a burden is something you choose to take on. We all have those. So it may not be the case that the children you bore and you raised, who are turning on you like small clawed animals, they're not really your burden. I'm afraid to say those are your loved ones, and that's normal. And cancer happened to me. As much as I felt incredibly sorry for myself, that's life. You know, we all encounter those things. You don't get out of life alive. Frankly, you know, life and death, that's part of the bargain. Burdens are the things you choose to take on. Like, for instance, becoming a Christian. Choosing to join a church. I know we sort of lie to people about joining the church. You know, we tell them what a great thing it is. It is a great thing. It is a wonderful thing, because taking on the burden of Christianity by yourself is crazy. Who would do that? Joining a church is an immensely helpful way of being a Christian. But we tell people about all the good stuff, and we wait until they sign the line on the bottom, and then we tell them about the hard stuff. How'd you like to go on a mission trip? How'd you like to help serve at Luke House? How'd you like to... And again, you know, those things aren't necessarily awful by any means. I mean, if you ask the crew at Luke House just how painful that is, they'll set you straight. You know, they really love being together and doing that ministry. But, you know, ask Nancy Baumgartner what it's like at the Personal Essentials Pantry, what it was like in the early days setting that ministry up. And what's it like having to face the women who come to the pantry when we can't give them what they need? It's not great. What's it like to become involved in a ministry, a social justice ministry, when you discover that the need far outweighs the ability that we have to meet it? What's it like to be the pastor of a church and have some funds for helping people when you discover that the tide of need is far greater than your church's ability to fulfill that need? So in other words, the people coming in off the street who need some money for gas, who need a night in a hotel, who need some grocery money, the people in your congregation who need a heating bill paid, that's way beyond the capability of your little pastoral funds. Pastoral fund. Discretionary fund. Thank you. There might be a reason why I retired from doing this. I can tell you, because I did it for a long, long time, that discretionary fund ran out by the second week, always. And two of my churches got replenished automatically once a month. So by the second week, I was turning people away. That's not fun. You know, when a woman comes in with her little kids because she needs some money for groceries, guess where that money came from after the second week? You know, usually for me, but, you know, sometimes there was somebody else in the office and they'd pay. So, you know, being a Christian, I would say on balance is a pretty cool gig, but there's a lot of really hard stuff here, and that's our cross. That's the stuff that's a burden. So when Jesus sort of changed his attitude in the passage that we're dealing with today and said, "Come to me, those who are weary, and take my yoke upon you, lay down your burden." That's what he's talking about. That's what he's talking about. I mean, he's talking about the stuff that people like us choose to take on. And he's talking about also the stuff that falls on people unjustly. So there's people like us, most of us, I'm guessing, who can exercise a lot of choice in our lives. We get by okay, even really well. We can keep food on the table. We can keep a roof over our heads. We get gas enough to get us to church, at least. We get by pretty well. And then there's people who don't have a choice about picking up a cross. Those are the other people Jesus is talking about. The people who live under some kind of unjust regime. And those are the people that we're here because to help. That's why we're here. You know, we come to this congregation because we know in this congregation we are focused on a ministry of serving those who are not going to be helped any other way. And at this period in the life of our country especially, but of our world, that number of people who need our ministry is huge and increasing every moment. And Jesus is talking to them. Come to me, because my burden is so much lighter than the burden that's imposed on you. Okay, so just think about this for a minute. Just, you know, like sit down and think about it for a minute. How is that going to happen? I mean, for somebody, the somebodies in Madison, let's think about African-American people, let's think about immigrants, let's think about, I mean, you know the list, right? It's a huge, huge list. They're going to come to Jesus and put their burdens down, lives easier. Well, the math doesn't work, right? Unless we pick up their burdens. That's how it works. So the yoke that Jesus puts upon us is the burden of loving those who have no other way forward except to place themselves in Jesus' hands. That's how it works. That's how the math sort of works. And the amazing thing that I want you to think about for yet another moment is that those people who need Jesus because they have nothing else, they're way, way, way more faithful than we are. Way more faithful. Could I just say it one more time? Way more faithful than we are. Do you know what attendance is like at African American churches in the South? Ours is like, I don't know. I don't know if we know from the search committee statistics, but we're like at 50% attendance, I would guess, which is incredibly high for a white mainline church, by the way, in the United States. African American churches in the South in this century approximates 90%. Do you know that giving in minority churches approximates 100% of the church's income? Now, we do incredibly well here. I mean, I served four churches before I came here, and I could not believe how incredibly high the giving is in this church. We rely on very few other sources for income here. Most mainline white Protestant churches depend on income from their endowments, fundraisers, and a distant third is income from pledging. That's not true for us. But in minority churches, which, by the way, is majority churches, we're the minority, the far and away highest source of income is money, monetary gifts from the congregation. So these people, and the highest source of help for members of the community in minority communities are their own churches. So these folks who have so little are already giving 100%. In every way they can. And we're doing, you know, a little bit. But yet, Jesus is saying to those disciples, and to the people who were also there listening, this is how you're going to make your life easier. You're going to stop worrying about the other things that you consider burdensome, and you're going to take on this new burden that I have to give you, which is going to be easier. Just take care of the 75% of the world's population who have it way, way, way worse than you do. This doesn't sound like it makes any sense. But let me explain it to you using my own life as an example, because I know that the best. How old was I when we got married? 54? Yes. I remarried at 54. I had never been a parent. I was married for 25 years to somebody else. We didn't have children. I was a pastor. I thought my life was difficult, but little did I know, because then I became a parent at 54 to two delightful, beautiful, genius young women who happen to be on the autism spectrum. I can't begin to tell you what my learning curve was like. It was like this. It's just been a really tough time for me. And you know, Kelsey will, and the girl's other biological mother will tell you that I've really done some good work as a parent, but inside this person, I feel like a complete and total 100% failure. And I am so consumed with how bad I am as a parent that I am completely self-focused at times. on my own self and how bad my problems are and that I hate myself because I'm so bad at this. And I get caught in these things about, you know, what am I doing and why can't I get better at this? And I take it out on my family because I get frustrated. And I am not a pretty person to be around. And if I did not have faith and did not have this church to come to every Sunday, that's the person I would be all the time. But fortunately, every now and then, this little thing goes off in the back of my head somewhere, and I think, oh, maybe you ought to pray for a minute. You know, maybe you need to just pull back a minute. And it will dawn on me, and I did this last night. This is why it's so fresh in my mind, because I was a mess last night. I was going to preach today. And that just raises my anxiety a tiny bit. And it just, everything was making me impossible, because my burden is like so heavy, and nobody understands. So I prayed. And I realized something. Our daughters do not belong to me. They belong to God. Kelsey is not my wife. She's God's daughter. Our daughters are a huge, huge blessing in my life. I had to wait 54 years to become a mother. But it is such a gift. My sermon does not belong to me. It belongs to the Holy Spirit. And the opportunity to do something positive in anyone else's life is what makes my life worth living. And it's what makes what I think of as burdens evaporate. When I think that I have it too hard, when I had cancer and I felt so sorry for myself, all I had to do was show up for radiation therapy and look at everyone else in the room and realize, no, this was not that tough of beef. And frankly, plug your ears, Mom. Plug your ears, Mom. Me was nothing compared to what my parents were going through. That was the hardest thing for me about having cancer. Serving other people when we think we have it tough is the cure for feeling put upon. Taking care of 75% of the world is nothing like a burden compared to what we do to ourselves. The minute we liberate ourselves by confessing to God that what we carry around really isn't a problem, by giving those ideas of burdens over to God, remembering that what we thought was too much to bear really isn't such a big deal, then what we need to do for other people becomes a joy. I know it doesn't sound sensible. I know it sounds ridiculous. I promise you it works, though. So Kelsey figured something out for me a couple of years ago. And the thing that she figured out was, if we do something positive for somebody the first thing in the morning, the rest of the day goes remarkably well. And I managed to maintain a discipline about this for quite a while, but I lost it recently. I'm now reigniting it. If I get up in the morning and the first thing I do is write a supportive email to somebody, the rest of my day is amazingly more positive. And that is incredible. That's like falling off a rock easy. I think that what Jesus is getting at for people like us in this passage is that taking on the yoke of loving the world is one of the easiest things we can do. So I challenge each of you to try it once. Just do it one time, and then let me know if you're a believer. Seriously. I won't be here. No, I will be. No, I won't be here next Sunday. I won't be here for two Sundays. So look, you've got two whole weeks. No, I won't be here that. You've got three whole weeks to try it. and then let me know. It's, you know, just, you only have to do it once. But I can almost bet you that if you do it once, you'll do it twice. And then I'll be back and I'll remind you to do it three times. Just try it. It'll work. Amen.